All right, here
Love
we are.
Talk Radio.
We're here today with Deborah Bankin, the author of the new Image graphic novel Posers, about LA nightlife, some young people trying to find themselves in the cacophony and din of Los Angeles. So why don't we just dive into it?
I think you summed it up pretty well.
Yeah, good. Let me just say, I'm Luis Reyes. I've been a graphic novel editor for about 8 years. I also work in the video game industry, and I actually worked with Deborah briefly at the LA Weekly many years ago.
I think you were doing film stuff, and I was doing book stuff at the time, right?
I was doing theater stuff at the time, actually. So
I don't know.
I also know Jonathan Bankin.
I hired
through Tokyo Pop, and I hired him to do some rewrites from there, so I got to know him as well. Why don't we just dive into talking about your book? I mean, first of all, the graphic novel, it's a black and white graphic novel with no tones, and so it has a very similar quality to books like Optic Nerve. And a little bit like blankets and things like that. And I noticed that the art style, Rick Mace's art style, definitely is similar to those books. So can you talk a little bit about why you feel that the art style, which is black and white, no tones, very few but deliberate lines, how it helps tell your story?
Yeah, well, basically, I mean, that was actually a conscious decision because Adrian Tomine is one of my favorite artists. I just love that clean, simple, modern, stark, black and white style. I've loved him for a long time. And this book originally was a DC Comics Minx book. And we can talk more about that later, the history. But DC paired me up with Rick Mace, the artist. And the reason I mention this is because they gave me actually a portfolio of six artists to choose from. Ones that they, you know, recommended and had been working with. And I was looking through them all, and Rick just popped off the page for me because he reminded me so much of Adrian Tomine. I mean, he's very different. Rick has kind of manga influence. In his past books, you see a little bit more of a manga influence. In this one, you see touches of it.
Well, I just want to touch on that, actually, real quick before we go back into the manga. The idea that the characters also break the fourth wall a lot in this book and kind of enter kind of almost a wacky, frenetic energy, that reminded me of manga, too. So it was nice that Rick was able to sort of, you know, obviously bite into something he really enjoys. So.
Yeah, we were a perfect pairing that way. And the fourth wall stuff was really fun. And I think it's because I'm a first-time comic book writer. I've been for 10 years doing journalism and covering L.A. as a journalist, but this is my first time in comics. I was so new to the genre that when I was writing it, I found myself commenting on the genre a lot. You know, like I was writing at a panel to tell my story, and so I would have the characters step off the page and comment on that for me. And my editor liked it, and it was kind of fun, and so we just went with it and made that a theme throughout the book. And then Rick took it to the next level in his drawings.
That's cool, yeah, and I was a graphic novel editor for many years for manga, and they do that in manga as well, so it was a nice little touch. Going back into, talking about the fourth wall and talking about your experience with comics, as a journalist, you're always writing to your audience, obviously, so you're always breaking the fourth wall, so it was interesting seeing it in this book. It's almost like a journalistic overview of what's happening in Los Angeles. But what about your experience with books? You said this is a first time graphic novel endeavor for you, but you've obviously known comic books and read comic books most of your life.
Not most of my life, but I would say that I started getting into comics probably in like my early 20s. So, you know, as a grown up, as a young adult. And I personally am drawn to non-superhero, like non-sci-fi, very much alternative comics. And as a reader, I love like literary memoir, you know, when I'm not reading comics, and like long-form narrative nonfiction journalism. So in comics, I'm drawn to people like, Alison Bechdel's Fun Home, of course, Persepolis. things like Craig Thompson's Blanket, you know, books that are like these sort of coming of age literary memoir stories in comic form. They're my favorites. When I sat down to write this book, it just happened naturally that it took a first person memoir tone, even though it's totally fiction. And I think that's where that came from.
Do you think that the comics medium is ideal or better at trying to capture that sort of youth coming of age theme than maybe memoir or maybe a movie or something like that? Because it seems to me that, like, we're looking at Blankets, we're looking at La Perdida by Jessica Abel, Optic Nerve,
mm-hmm.
all of these books they're all about early 20s something people or late teens coming of age. So how do you think the graphic novel form helps tell that
mm-hmm.
story?
Well, it's an interesting question. Hang on a sec. My online radio. Sorry.
Okay.
I was looking for a song for posers to sum up the book, and I came across Girl Talk, this sort of mashup of 19 tracks and of like nightlife music, everything from Lady Gaga to Daft Punk to New Order. And so I was listening to that right before you called. I had it on pause and unpaused it by accident. It's an interesting question that you asked, because I do think that literary memoir and comics go together, especially when you're a writer and you're an artist together. Somebody like Jessica Abel or Craig Thompson. And also this new book I'm reading called Essex County by Jeff Lemire. And because you have control over the words and the images, and because it's such a lean medium to tell your story in, so many panels per page, so many dialogue balloons per panel, it's almost like a literary haiku poem. You have to be so targeted and specific in how you tell your story that it becomes really personal, because you're writing it and you're drawing it, and it becomes incredibly targeted and poignant and lean, and so it becomes really powerful. And I think that that's why when you have stories like this, like Jessica Abel, Fun Home, Persepolis, Jessica Abel's Los Perlitos, they really resonate in this comics graphic novel form, more so even than a movie, which is more collaborative and the vision might get diluted a little, and even more than like prose, where a lot is lost in the description.
Well, right. I mean, I think a lot of the things that a young personality goes through almost can't be captured in words. So it's really nice to see the faces and the reactions they have to things. That's what we commented a little bit before we started this, that Rick Mays really is able to, in very few lines, capture these very strange, very, very growing emotions on the faces of your characters.
Yeah, he really nailed it, you know, and it's really hard actually in the writing of a graphic novel, because there may only be a few words per page or a few dialogue bubbles per page or per mm-hmm. panel, and those sequences could have taken me a week to write, because it's coming up with how to tell the story in images and how to move the plot forward with action and images and how to be poetic almost without words. And and then the artist takes that and interprets it and layers it into visuals, and it takes a lot of time. It's deceptively difficult.
Now you mentioned you're gonna continue writing graphic novels. Could you maybe focus on or tell us a little bit about maybe a lesson you've learned about writing a graphic novel through this experience?
Yeah, I think I'm working on two follow-ups. One is a sequel to this, which I hadn't intended, and I decided to do because people have really been connecting with the characters, and I'm hearing that a lot. And you know, I've heard it a dozen times over the last 2 weeks, and the book just came out. You know, when can we hear more from these characters? So I decided to do a follow-up, and Rick has agreed he's going to try to draw it for me. So working on that, and then also working on a long-form piece of journalism I'm adapting to graphic nonfiction. And so I guess the lesson I learned in doing the first book is to keep it, you know, really, really lean. I might put less description and less explanation in the next books, because it almost weighed it down a little bit, the telling of the story rather than the showing of the story. And
do you think,
yeah.
Well, keep going. I'll follow up later.
Well, I was just going to say shot directing the scenes was really difficult for me because I'm a writer and I love words and I love prose and I love telling stories in journalism. So learning how to shot direct, how to go from a close-up, you know, to a wide shot or an establishing shot to a medium over the shoulder didn't come naturally, and I really had to learn that.
Okay, cool. And do you find that doing that in graphic novels is different than doing it in film?
Well, I've never made films, and I've written screenplays in the past, and I found graphic noveling to be really similar to screenwriting, more so than prose. So I don't know about film.
You can do stuff like on page 142, there's this scene which they're all at this club, I guess, in LA, a place where celebrities stay. You have several balloons in which you see the characters kind of moving through the various stages of their conversation, but against the backdrop of a paparazzi scene. I mean, it's something like you can never do in film. And, you know, approaching a page like that, how to what extent did you, engineer the composition of that page?
So funny. That's one of my favorite pages in the book. And that
it's
was
great,
a nightmare for the letterer, you can imagine.
It's all over the place.
The writer writes it and envisions it, and that's actually exactly what I envisioned. So when the artist then drew it, Rick, he realized exactly what I was imagining. So, you know, I wrote it, he nailed it from an artistic standpoint, and a third person goes in and letters the page and places the balloons, decides where to place the balloons and how to pace the storytelling on the page. And my letterer, just Clem Robbins, it was a nightmare for him because there were so many balloons. But I think he realized it, did a great job. That's an example of something you can't do in film and you can't do in prose writing. It's just to have all the characters on there reacting to each other. And it's really fluid and it's really silly and it was really fun. And that's something that I love doing comics for that reason.
Could you talk a little bit about you hinted at it a little bit there, but could you expound upon the working relationship with Rick?
We actually have never met in person, but we have this really close relationship. We've talked on the phone and we've emailed a lot. We were paired up through DC Comics. Rick used to live in LA, so he knew the scene here really well, and that's partly why I wanted to work with him. Plus, I loved his art. And Rick and I worked together for a good month before I even started writing the story. And that's because I worked on fleshing out the characters with my editor. And she'd send me questions like, what's on their iPod? What's in their refrigerator? You know, stuff like that. And I'd have to, just really flesh out their backstories and their mental internal landscape. And while I was doing that, Rick was doing sketches of the characters, different versions of them. So I was developing them from the inside out, and he was developing them from the outside in. And we did this for about a month, month and a half, until we finally struck the character, what they looked like and their internal landscape. And then I started to write. And so that gives you a sense of how collaborative it was throughout the whole writing process. I took pictures around Los Angeles. I found the exact house that each character lived in, one in the valley, one in Arcadia, one in Echo Park, photographed the house from all the different angles. You know, I made them real people here, and I sent Rick that photographic reference, and then he used that to work with.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, that was one thing that really popped out was that L.A. seemed so vital, real, and gritty. And almost like, and you hint at this a little bit in the book, at the beginning of the book, this whole idea of L.A. noir. Like, you seem to almost follow a because there is a mystery involved. There is a kind of almost like a person who's a hapless victim of this world she's kind of thrust into, which is how a lot of L.A. Noir was written. How influential is L.A. Noir to the creation of this story?
Hey, you really picked up on a lot of that here. You should be a book interviewer one day doing podcasts.
Well, I'll try that.
That was really purposeful. And, about Los Angeles, before I ever started writing this, I knew that I wanted L.A. to be a fourth character in the book. And this is a story that you could not tell in any other city. And it's really very much of L.A., and Rick just does a great job capturing L.A. visually. Scenes of the downtown skyline, the L.A. River, Echo Park, Silver Lake, it's all in there. And so Ellie is a fourth character, and I wanted it to be like a light comic touches of noir. You know, there's a sort of a seemingly glamorous surface that has this darker underbelly underneath. There are characters, seedy characters, and a downward spiral, and there's a lot of breaking the fourth wall, all of which are sort of noir-y things. But in this book, it's light and tongue-in-cheek. It's not a serious, hard-boiled noir. But I do mention James Ellroy in the book, and I mentioned Jo Didion. She's not noir, but and a lot of real photographers I mentioned in the book and other literary figures.
Yeah, I noticed how many photographers you brought up in the book. Are you to what extent are you a photography consumer? I mean, do you go out and see a lot of photography exhibits?
Yeah, I love photography, and actually, I was a photographer. Well, I don't know, when I was like 16 through maybe 20 something, you know, I wanted to be a photographer, and I studied it in college for a little while, and then I switched gears to writing, which I think I'm much more suited to, but I never gave up my love of photography, and I've written about photography and art here in L.A. for many, many years. So some of the photographers I've interviewed before, like Catherine Opie, appear in the book. They're mentioned in the book.
Right. That's interesting that you have this passion for photography, which is obviously an images-based medium, and then you moved into writing, obviously, which in journalistic writing, which is a reporting medium, and then it seems like in graphic novel, then you merge those two. So there's a how was that for you? I mean, did you feel daunted by that, or did you really embrace it?
It came really naturally. It was really organic. I mean, I loved photography, you know, like I said before, wanted to be a photographer, switched to writing, and started actually doing screenwriting, which is a very visual writing medium. And then I got into, covering the art scene at the LA Weekly, which got me into journalism, writing about the things that I loved, like photography and art and books. And then I just fell in love with journalism, you know, with the stories that you could tell and with words and with, you know, facts and telling people's stories. And I still love it. And it's my first love. You know, I'll never give it up. But going back to fiction writing, graphic novels felt and comics felt like a natural because it was so visual.
Right. And you already have this visual sense. To what extent do you feel your journalistic voice is embedded within this book?
Well, I mean, the book is based on, the backdrop of the book is based on the L.A. nightlife world, and that's a scene that I know well, and I've been covering L.A. arts and culture and nightlife for many years. So it draws on, the backdrop comes from my experiences, and so there's a sense of honesty and realism there that I hope rounds it out. But I don't think the characters' voices are influenced by journalism. That's real hardcore fiction, you know, it just, I went into another zone in my brain. And went to town with the fiction part of it. But I hope that the backdrop resonates some truth from my journalism experience and that the city of L.A. comes through kind of crystal clear.
Yeah. Well, I think the reason the characters are drawn in such sharp relief is because the background and the backdrop you painted is so realistic. In that direction, then, could we talk a little bit about the reality versus the faux reality? I mean, there is a point of wackiness that takes root in the story that is kind of beyond what reality would be. It would be beyond what journalism would be. Yet it rests on this very real kind of backdrop. So, because when we start reading the story, you really do feel as if it's more of a real story about a girl's life in L.A., and then it starts taking these very almost fantastical twists and turns. Is this an element of your other fiction writing, or is this something kind of you discovered freshly within the graphic novel form?
I think it's definitely an element of fiction. I mean, it's funny because the book is called Posers, and so everybody thinks it's about posers, party posers. But it's really not. I mean, there's a tiny bit of, you know, commentary on L.A. posers and, you know, that sort of thing, sort of surfacey things, but really, it's posers in a much broader sense. It's that things in general aren't as they seem on the surface, all across the board. So, you know, like I've said before, like a tattoo parlor is really an underground speakeasy. A therapist couch is really a psychic's, Hollywood Boulevard psychic's office. you know, a seemingly nefarious gang member is really a poetry reading good guy.
Right.
Things that are glamorous and beautiful on the surface are really dark and lonely, and things that are seemingly ugly, like the LA River, dry and concrete, is really quite beautiful. So it's
that's
the overall theme.
You have a comment in the book about sitting at the LA River and remembering that at one time, I can't find the page actually right now, but at one time, you know, people float on this with their canoes, and they saw the LA River in a completely different way.
Oh, page 106.
Okay, great. Yeah, I couldn't quite find it. Do you feel that that is what Los Angeles is all about, or do you think this is just one facet of Los Angeles?
You mean the double entendres and the multi-layered
The duality, because the duality of everything is a big part of Los Angeles, simply because we do live in the center of the film world, and illusion is a big part of everybody's kind of day-to-day life. But to what extent do you feel like that is pervasive in Los Angeles? Do you think it defines everything, or do you think it...
I think it kind of defines everything. I mean, I think in the world we live in, every city, everywhere, there's a sense of duality. That's kind of, you know, partly what the book pokes at. But Los Angeles, more than anything, I think represents this more than any other city. I mean, you have this duality because of the film world, and it's a city of illusion and reinvention and has a whole history of that. Plus, also, LA itself is a misunderstood city. Everybody outside of LA thinks it's something different. And you know... It's just, there is no real LA. It's pockets and niches, and it's just so hard to define. And it's a big misunderstood city, and so there's that. And I also felt like comics and graphic novels are a misunderstood genre. There's the perfect genre to tell that story in. Because people think it's so easy to work in, but it's not.
Right, you're originally from Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, I'm from Philly, born and raised in Philly, and then... But I came to L.A. a long, circuitous route via San Francisco and then Tokyo, Japan for a few years and then Boston for grad school and then L.A.
How do you feel that all of that traveling you did and living in other cities and being born in a city quite diametrically opposed to Los Angeles, I think, how did that help you, or how does that color your vision of the city?
Well... That's, you know, I, at my heart, I love cities. You know, I love being an urban explorer, I guess you could say. I've also lived in Jerusalem for 6 months, and I lived for about that amount of time in Manchester, England. And so, you know, England, Tokyo, Jerusalem, Boston, Philadelphia, and L.A. is where I grew up, all those places. And I love cities, and I love exploring them, and I love writing about them. And so... That's why I feel coming to a career at the LA Times, writing about Los Angeles is like the perfect place to land. And in doing fiction and graphic novels, it's naturally going to be about, the city's going to take a front row to that. I mean, it's largely going to be about the city that I'm writing about as well as the characters.
Cool. Well, we should probably wrap this up. It's been fantastic talking about the book. Like I said, I really enjoyed it. And, I wanted to actually note one thing. We were talking a lot about what you can do in graphic novels that you can't do in other media. And on page 74, you have a wordplay joke that would really only work on the page, yet you have this guy saying it as if the characters can completely get what he's talking about. He says that right sounds more like a phobia to me, but he spells phobia, F-A-U-X-B-I-A. But you would pronounce it the same way, either way. So you wouldn't be able to actually do with people actually talking. But you set this book up as such a breaking the fourth wall and self-aware that it's a comic that a joke like that worked. But I just thought that was a beautiful little thing that you can't do in any other medium. So
yeah, not even in prose, because you have pictures of the characters here. The main character's talking, and then the other characters pop up almost like little web pop-ups, and they offer their comments on what she's talking about. And that's very, like, graphic novel comics.
Right. Yeah, definitely, definitely. We're definitely running out of time and being encouraged to wrap this up, but I know that you have an event at Skylight on April 12th.
Yep, this Tuesday, April 12th at 7:30 p.m. There's a panel discussion at Skylight with me, Jen Wang, and Hope Larson, both amazing graphic novelists. And the next night, Wednesday, April 13th at 7 p.m. at Meltdown Comics. There's a signing and then a stand-up comedy show in the back room. And you can buy the book on Amazon.com or any bookstore like Borders, Barnes & Noble, or any comic book shop in L.A. or anywhere.
Hey, fantastic. And
thank you so much for having me, too.
Oh, yeah. No. So thank you so much for talking about the book and looking forward to reading your next one. And we'll end it there. And, again, hopefully we'll see each other real soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Debbie.
Till soon. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Left you on a debris at the Sunday morning market. You were starting through the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. Cause you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. At the depot with the General Workers Union, and yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight and they're not working. Left you on the debris. Now we both know you got the money, and I wonder what you would have done.